Welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast. Whether you're a first time facilitator or a seasoned pro, listen in for tips and tricks to make a bigger impact at the next workshop you deliver. And now, your host, she can't deal with the Brisbane winter even though it doesn't get that cold, Leanne Hughes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you book out 5 more workshops for every workshop that you deliver. Thank you so much for tuning in, for pressing play. I hope you're having a great time or taking care of yourself wherever you are in the world. Last week on the show, it was a solo episode where I was sharing my $1 million idea. Okay, it could be worth anything, but I think it's definitely in the right hands. It could be worth $1 million. An idea that can supercharge the retention on your virtual programs, that can create a strong culture across your teams and across your organization. This is why I recommend that every team organization should have a podcast. And I covered that last week. This week, I'm chatting to someone who has an extremely cool role in the university sector. In fact, he works at my old university, the University of Queensland. And I so wish he was in this role back when I was there. In fact, I wish the role actually existed. His name is Marvin Fox, and he's the Senior Program Officer for UQ Ventures, leading the Validate Pre-Accelerator Program and running design sprints for research and industry clients. In this conversation, Marvin shares his incredible career and life experiences traveling around this amazing world and how he handles that with a serious dose of curiosity and wonder. That's what I really picked up from him in this chat. Now, in this one, he shares how he started to make his workshops engaging and welcoming for participants, realizing that it is so important to make that experience great in order to get your students speaking about it to their peers and using word of mouth to fuel future sessions, to fuel uptake of sessions. He also talks about the role of human-centered design in teaching and learning and designing for the student first. Marvin shares a lot of cool catchphrases and ways of thinking about workshop delivery, design, engagement, which I'm sure this will plant a seed in your brains to rethink your approach to sessions as well. Throughout his career, Marvin has championed the importance of enterprise skills, growth, and development. With his background in international business, he's built a career in business and education in China and Japan. Recently, he designed and delivered programs at QUT. That's another university in Brisbane, at QUT's Creative Enterprise Australia and QUT Entrepreneurship, focusing on the quality of the learning experience for students, creatives, and emerging leaders. Not only that, as you'll hear, he's a cool bloke. He's funny, great sense of humor, self-deprecating, calming, which will come across in this conversation. Now, don't forget, when the show is over, join our community of over 1,600 facilitators in our free group on Facebook called The Flipchart. You can support the show by heading on over to buymeacoffee.com/Leanne Hughes. And of course, reach out to Marvin. Let him know what you learned, what you'll take action on, what you found interesting. Ask him a question. Link to contact Marvin is in the show notes for this one over at firsttimefacilitator.com/episode190. Now, onto the show. I'm excited to welcome onto the First Time Facilitator podcast, Marvin Fox. Marvin, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Leanne. So really honored to be a part of all this. And hello to your listeners and viewers and your audience. This is going to be valuable. And hopefully I can share a little bit of my journey with you all today.
Well, that's why you're here. I'm so genuinely curious. We have a mutual connection, Tyson. Tyson was an early guest on the podcast, actually. He connected us over LinkedIn. So he's dobbed in his friend. But yeah, you've got to talk to this guy. And I thought, well, this is a great excuse. So Marvin, this is the first time we've actually had a conversation. Can you please share what you do and how you discovered the work that you do now? What's your story?
Oh, okay, Leanne, a little bit of a way back. I'll get on the way back train in a little bit, but I think right now introduce who I am. My name is Marvin Fox, and I facilitate and provide beyond the classroom experiences, which sounds really kind of scary at the same time, for university students. And I've been doing this for a while, and I work within the university staff kind of workforce itself and help them provide these kind of enrichment opportunities for current students, future students as well. So that's your high school students looking to study within the university sector, and of course, alumni. But recently, the universities I've been working for have been engaging people in industry as well. So it's kind of flipped it, and wow, I'm providing learning experience or beyond the classroom experiences workshop engagements for all, for a broader audience now, not just pimply faced,
often hungover. I'm just trying to think of myself at 19.
They're an amazing audience to work for, and I have so much respect for university audience. I think that's why I've hung on to them so much, because I love that audience. But going back on the way back train now, Leanne, the audiences that I've been providing learning experiences for has been pretty broad. It all started, this goes way back in the way back train, because I remember doing Army Cadets when I was 13. And Army Cadets, if you don't know what that is, kind of like Boy Scouts, but it's for mini Army Club. But it's pretty full on, because they will, you'll be instructed by real Army Reserves and military personnel to teach you a lot of the military training stuff. And, you know, you get promoted through the ranks. And one of the things that you have to do when you get promoted is to run lessons. And this was like, and this is military style lessons. And for those of our viewers who have military experience, they'll get it straight away. It's very, well, pretty much no pun intended, very regimental. It's very by the book, by the numbers, especially when you're teaching drill. And that is like the movements and actions that you do, saluting and marching and you know, doing present arms with a rifle. It's very much like something that I later took up, which was martial arts. I did Taekwondo. You get up to a level where you're ready to instruct, like your first stamp black belt, and you instruct, you do this by the numbers. You have to count and do all the Korean. I was doing Taekwondo, so you had to speak a little bit of the Korean lingo to get the point across. And I'm up the front, I'm up, you do what I say. Very didactic. Mm-hmm. So that exposed me to that world of teaching. But then you go through uni, I study business with a focus on Chinese as well. I think it's late 90s. We all had like, maybe I could be a Kevin Rudd one day, like an ambassador for Australia and bridge the gap between China and Australia. And I did have that kind of a strong drive to work overseas and have that international business career. So pursuing that, but little did I know that straight after graduation that I headed for mainland China. But the first gig that you find is actually a teaching English gig. Right? You're a foreigner. Yeah, you're going to be an English teacher for this particular government school. And then eventually I found myself in universities over there. But it was funny because their perspective of teaching over there is quite different to the Western world. And it's still very much teacher-centered. Okay, it's very didactic. You can tell by the way classrooms in China are set up. They're all kind of facing forward, or Asia in general. They're all facing forward. The architecture of the rooms, there are like 60 students in the room. They're all facing forward and desks neatly spaced. And they can't raise their hand. It's pretty much discouraged. And you listen, you shut up, you do the work that the teacher up the front says. I walk into this lecture theatre. I remember one of the university gigs that I had in China. It's like, oh, welcome, our English teacher from Australia. And this little Asian dude walks in the lecture theatre full of 300 Chinese university students. And that was like a point. It was like, wow, they all laughed. And I was like, wow.
Did they?
Yeah, they all laughed. Who's this chump? Because it's face value, right? It's like you want to see that we're expecting a Caucasian guy. Come on, like you said, Australian. We were waiting to see that, you know, I don't know, Hugh Jackman lookalike or whoever, or Steve Irwin. They're all a big fan of the crocodile. Little did I know that, you know, that was the start of me actually falling in love with the world of teaching and learning. I saw it as a means to an end. Okay, I'll just teach English in China until I get that corporate job. And I eventually had that career in consultancy, advertising later in Sydney. But back in Sydney, again, I decided to get serious with teaching and learning, get qualified in postgrad in adult education, TESOL literacy. And later I headed for Japan. Only because I met a Japanese woman in Sydney, and she said, and then I said, it's your turn to go home, and it's my turn to be the expat again.
Yeah.
And introduce your family to the next generation. We had a baby in Sydney. So then, starting that life in Japan, and this time as a business owner for my very own English school. We called it Fox English, not really original, but it was a small town, Japan. Jeez, I studied the wrong language in university.
Yeah.
Damn, Japanese. But it was, again, it was like living and working in a country, especially a non-English speaking country, of not of your native language. I think that's a
it's a great way to really keep you grounded and to remind you that you are not the center of the world, and you need to really accommodate for the environment around you. So that taught me a lot of cultural intelligence, if not emotional intelligence, learning the life in Japan. But running that business, predominantly my audience there was from a kindergarten age students all the way to octogenarians. They're the ones who are really wanting to learn conversational English in Japan. Quite a different market to the world of teaching English in mainland China or Korea or Thailand, where there was this really like drive to study English at a really advanced level, academic level, because for them it was like, this is what's needed to get ahead. Mm. Whereas in Japan, you know, for them, everything's contextual and I can't be making broad strokes here, but for that particular town, I found that the general sense of that audience were studying English really as an extra curricular skill development that they'll have. It could be a nice thing to have when they go travel or just to expand and culturally develop their skills rather than, hey, I need this for my career. You know, that's a completely different goal. So the drive with the students was maybe a little bit more laid back. You know, they just wanted to learn English to have fun, especially the kids. And this was the turning point. Like for me, like, oh yeah, teaching and learning, I studied this, you know, I should know this. And a lot of my studies were focused on andragogy, which is the study of teaching and learning for adults, which is you need to separate pedagogy, you know, teaching and learning for children. And maybe it was there in practice in Japan. I had a little bit of experience teaching kind of middle school students in China, but in Japan, teaching little kindergarten kids, you quickly realize, oh my goodness, you're not the center of attention. You know, you need to make sure that you have to have their learning, their needs met, and they'll quickly get really bored if you're not engaging them with all their senses of different styles of learning, kinesthetic styles of learning, right? You need to vary that up. So I got really good, like you can see the guitars behind me.
Yeah.
And, the extent of my skills and cover songs that I was playing in Japan in teaching kids were mostly Wiggles covers, you know, so nursery rhymes and Wiggles covers. So that really made me think that teaching and learning needs to be a lot more student-centered and focused more so on the outcomes that they need to achieve. And perhaps even just to the total experience that they might have in the middle of that engagement. And that kind of makes me think about the work I do now and the workshops that I provide, the programs that I run. And I maybe an emphasis on programs rather than just a one workshop.
Because,
you know, it's like a boot camp. Okay, I'm providing this boot camp experience. And it's a little bit longer term. It's not that slam bam, thank you, ma'am, you've done your workshop, see you later, here's your certificate, never going to see you again. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, hey, I'm going to develop your journey throughout this program and beyond. So here I am doing these innovation and design thinking and design sprint workshops and entrepreneurial mindset stuff for our students, for our university audience. And similarly, they have nuances of both pedagogy and andragogy.
And I can imagine.
You know, they're not, and most of the programs actually, because I see myself as the service within the university that's the love heart, because I'm the relationship building part of the university, because the students, they've all bought the product already. You don't have to do the hard sell.
Yeah.
You're there to really add that extra bit of value. So for them, they're not paying, well, they don't feel as if they're paying for the product, right? So that's good and bad. Sometimes you get that mindset that, hey, you know,
there's only in the game because it's not like an extra. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because it doesn't change their GPA. So it's beyond the curriculum, right? So it's non-award. We call it non-award. It means you don't get credit for it. So they have to think really long term. It's like, what's in it for me? You know, okay, this is going to add to my career profile and make me look good on LinkedIn and make me kind of, you know, something to brag about that way. It's all very braggy, right? On LinkedIn.
Look
what I did. But that's the motivation that you somehow maybe need to tap in to say that, hey, this in the long term, this is adding and making you a lot more robust in the future of work, blah, blah, blah. But I think at the same time, I'm there to kind of just give them a little bit of a good time, just add that enrichment because
absolutely. Can I ask you on that?
Yeah.
You brought up a really good point around, I find it interesting, like the outcomes, like what's in it for them is actually like, it's pretty amazing what you're doing. And in fact, I wish that you were around when I was at university. I was so interested. I love your mug. It says I'm having a no hair day.
Yeah.
If you're listening in. Yeah. Yeah. So personally, I wish that there was something like this on offer when I was in university all those years ago. But you talk about what's in it for them, and you kind of brought two examples. So one is like their future prospects, the way of thinking, like that's great, but that's not what people are buying into in the short term. They're like, oh, will it make me look good on LinkedIn if I post something about it? Isn't that interesting? Like the two different, and it's funny, even when we're trying to attract market people to our business, sometimes we've got to talk in, while we're all about the transformation and like how you can grow and learn, sometimes it's like, how do we even get them there in the first place? And it's those like mini rewards that will get the foot in the door, and then it's up to you to create that great experience. Yeah. So I'm curious around this phrase that you keep bringing up, beyond the classroom experience. Like, what does that actually mean? Like, what does it look like through the life cycle of a student?
It's really broad, actually, taking that phrase to make it my own, but no, it's quite broad. It's going to cover a lot of different activities for students. I mean, Leanne, we all have had like college or university or even adult extra workshop at some sort of educational institution. And we've had that experience having kind of a school-like experience after school. And most of the time, it's quite transactional. You go in there, you've got tunnel vision, you know, you sit your classes, you're there to pass, get that grade, get that certificate. It's very transactional. And it's very seldom that we actually establish that really good bond and rapport with our fellow students, our instructors, our lecturers, and everyone that we engage with in that institution. So it makes it quite cold.
Yes. Yes. I remember just like a lot of my classes, I'd rock up, I'd just sit in the lecture theatre, I wouldn't meet anyone or talk to anyone. And what a missed opportunity. I had never reflect on it. Like all those amazing people I could have. Yeah.
No, if anything, okay, it might have prepared some students to like, this is how it is in the real world. You know, it's goal-oriented. You know, we're not here to make friends. We've got no time for friends. And I think it's a little bit of a sad case that there was that period. Maybe not so now. I think a lot of educational institutions, universities, and every institution out there, they actually got this pretty much on point right now.
Really?
It's a great time to be a student. I think it's a fantastic time to be a student because a lot of institutions get it. They know that students are paying for these very expensive degrees, not just for that piece of paper anymore.
No.
And that beyond the classroom experience is everything beyond that classroom. So there's two categories here. There's one that's called extracurricular, and that kind of gets played down. But I think, no, don't play it down because that's just as important. Extracurricular is the stuff that's going to include everything that might not be super relevant to what you might be studying. So it could be the roller hockey club. Yes, I'm putting up my hand up. I did join the roller hockey club in my undergrad degree and got beaten up like crazy. No, it's going to be that physical, like the chicken.
Yeah. I've seen the footage and like, that's not for me. I played a non-contact sport, netball, although pretty contacting now. Yeah.
It's funny. It's one of those things like, oh, should I join that? You know, and you join like all those clubs and societies that you do as a student. They're really important.
Yeah.
You know, as obscure as those clubs and societies are, there's a club in the society for everything that you might be interested in. There's, you know, there's an app for that. There's a club and society for
that. Yeah, that's right. I joined a lot of the engineering ones, even though I wasn't an engineer. They had the best parties. Yeah.
Super important. You need to have those kind of outlets to socialize. People neglect that. And it's like, oh, that's just a waste of time. It's like, but no, it's so super important. Mm-hmm. And then you might have another level of engagement beyond the classroom that might be in the category of co-curricular. Quite a fairly new term and started in the States, and they started thinking, hey, what kind of career building or career profile adding, value adding engagement can we provide our university students? They've been kind of doing this indirectly with all these other engagements, but let's do it formally. Let's look at what they're studying curriculum. How can we bolster that with all these kind of offerings? So I've been working in that space for a while now, hence working in entrepreneurial kind of skill building and experiences. And they might be in the form of competition. They might like, you know, like, oh, there's a particular prize money to win it in this pitching panel, or it could go national, it could go international, those kind of exposure elements to it. You know, you could be on a stage in front of an international audience. So that's like for students are like that. Their eyes light up and go, wow, okay, that's going to really catapult my profile and my career. So there's those kind of career oriented, like leadership. This is going to
add to your leadership skills. But then at the same time, I like the workshops and engagement that kind of slows it down a little bit for the students. But I think one thing that we forget, a lot of university students these days, or educational institutions, the typical student is ridiculously busy.
Really?
Yeah, they're inundated.
Working and...
Yeah, they've got so many commitments. And we assume that they're just living in their parents' house and, you know, just getting free rent. But no, their schedules are chockers. Some of them, a lot of the high-achieving students or the students that might not have a choice, might not have that socioeconomic advantage that others might have, they're always kind of feeling as if they're fighting an uphill battle, and they're making sure that they soak up as much as they can while they're on campus, while they're at uni. So it's pretty tough. Like, so you realize, oh, wow, you're competing with a lot of things in the students' lives. They're juggling part-time jobs. They're like looking after families. It's a lot more complex these days, right? So you might have students who are a little bit older. You might have students coming in from rural areas. International students, of course, completely different needs and pressures. Oh my goodness, the pressure that an international student might have. So it all gets quite complicated really quickly in the world of university land and providing experiences for that audience. Yeah.
If you think of it just as an external, you think, oh yeah, students versus staff, you know, the segmentation of students that you've just explored, and even in terms of socioeconomic and drivers and pressure, it's fascinating actually. And it's also interesting. So I like to talk about this thing about attention. I often say we are in a battle for attention. Like even when I work with organizations and getting people to show up, and even doing like if there's pre-work, or you have to make things appealing. I often bring like a marketing approach into like when I'm trying to just like, let's just really drive this, but not just an email about, hey, come to a workshop. You've got to do something a bit different to gather that attention. So what are you doing to get people contributing and being part of the work that you offer? Like how are you, getting them interested and then enabling them to show up?
I think you could do a lot of marketing spin in a lot of, you can always bolster that up. But I think these days, and perhaps a little bit of experience that I've had working in this space in university for the last 7 years, that students are after authentic message, no matter what that is. If it's coming from a big kind of brand or corporate, it's like, dilly. Yeah. It needs to be coming from a genuine voice. And that means putting faces on this. So I think for anyone out there, and maybe you can take this in your context, that it's okay to have a non-scripted message. It's okay just to not water down your language, but keep it conversational. If it's too stiff and kind of, something that looks like it's straight out of Hansard, you know, that's a script that's from, Mr. Speaker. You know, that, if we all sound like politicians when we're communicating to our audience.
So true.
You know, I think you've lost them a little bit. Like, just be a little bit more down to earth. And
very refreshing.
That authenticity, that's hard to do. That's hard to do. And that requires a little bit of time, a little bit of nurturing, a little bit of marination and of development of that trust between you and that audience. They recognize, he's not just spamming us. You know, they are not just spamming us. Oh, it's that person again. You realize also that leveraging your community, leveraging your network of, like, for example, I'll make sure that we'll get endorsed by a particular connector. That connector can just like... unlock. Okay, one particular academic, one professor will just say to his massive cohort of students, like, hey, I trust these guys. You need to attend this. And all of a sudden, she was like, okay. It could be a secret question in that workshop that we're not getting graded for, but who knows? Because our professor just recommended it, endorsed it. So, I think that's a tricky one. I think that's always going to be a work in progress for. In my context, and certainly a lot of contexts, how do you get that buy-in from that audience? What is that hook? What's in it for providing that value to them and making sure that perhaps they come back? That it's not just a transactional thing, that there is this continuous improvement kind of mindset that they have with their professional development, skills development, whatever that could be. Oh, yeah, I love that continuous development.
Yeah, you've got a lot of gold dust in there, so you have to get the transcript and, like, pull out all your words and just, like, throw it into a post. I find that's the best. Like, I love being a podcast guest because in the conversation you just come out with things. Like, I've never said that before, but I'll, that sounds like great.
Morphing my jargon into my own.
Exactly, as we go along. Interesting around that, about finding that, they call them, like, champions in change management. it's really kind of evangelists for your work that can spruik it, that have the reputation and the connections as well. So let's just say, so you got the attention, they come in, and then as you said, you want them to come back or ideally like tell someone else so we can like organically grow this with great people.
Yeah.
So then there's like, I that's like my approach as well, is like let the workshop be like the word of mouth marketing tool. But in order to do that, well, if it, the unfortunate thing about word of mouth is if it's really bad, they'll tell more people. But if it's like, if it's great, they'll also tell people. So what type of experience, like how do you create an environment where people feel welcomed, they feel like they're happy to speak up, and are there any particular techniques, tools that you use?
Activity. Well, a lot of the things that universities do these days is actually gamify it a little bit. Ooh. And so there is a little bit of incentive to make it so that the students are creating some sort of an artifact after the experience. So that could be in the form of a blog, a vlog, some sort of post for them to kind of showcase their experience, which is great because suddenly you're encouraging students to develop this portfolio kind of approach, portfolio development in the skills, because it's actually really hard to track your record. Some universities are doing this right. There's this beautiful kind of interface for students to kind of really monitor their engagement beyond the classroom and you know what that means. How can they articulate that value to particular future stakeholders? It's like, oh, what workshop did I attend? You know, how many of them were there? I can't remember. That can all be lost. So what we tell students is don't wait for that platform to kind of make it easy for you. Have a track record of all your points, your XP, speaking the language of gaming with students, which I think it's a really beautiful parallel to kind of bring in here in the world of teaching and learning and workshop development. Gaming is such a goldmine for lots of learnings for us. And the thing here with my reference to gaming is XP, experience points, right? You need to rack that up to get good.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You need to level up. You want to level up
level
in
up.
Mario?
Yeah.
You need those experience points. You need those side missions in order to kind of complete this big boss mission.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Keep going with the metaphors. I'm like, I'm writing this down.
And you're going to die. And this is kind of scary.
Yeah.
Because gamers, they actually have a beautiful beginner's mindset and an entrepreneurial mindset because they're actually not afraid to fail. It's inbuilt. They shrug it off. I'm doing this run to test my shortcomings, and I'm going to repeat this. So there's this rinse, repeat kind of iterative kind of mindset already with a lot of gamers. They don't even know it, but they have it.
Yeah.
And they build that resilience. And resilience is not about gritting your teeth and bearing it. That's grit. Resilience is more about how you can bounce back from adversity, how you can bounce back from challenging situations. And I can see that within the mindset of gamers. They really do. And I incorporate that in a lot of my workshops to say, it's a mindset of a gamer, this all this entrepreneurship stuff. You as a student entrepreneur, apply the mindset of a gamer, level up. You know, it's all about skill building, right? Because you're all just, okay, how can I offer value? What can I do for this world rather than, you know, because, you know, you've all heard the rhetoric, especially championed by Cal Newport in the States with his book, So Good They Can't Ignore You, about, you know, passion is overrated. It's about the value that you can provide for others. That's more important. The drive, the purpose of you and that mission that you have, usually that's what we mean when we say passion.
Yeah.
Passion's quite fickle. It comes and goes. And I tell students because they get kind of fed this from early on, follow your dreams, follow your passion.
I don't have a passion.
It's kind of outdated. Yep. So focus on skill building, focus on getting those tangible or maybe intangible kind of value that you can provide for others in your life. And that requires a little bit of time, experience points, gaming.
Experience point. I freaking love that. What's a good game that I should start off with? Fortnite? Like what would you, I'm not a first time gamer. I'm going to switch the podcast now. So what game should I start with?
First time gamer. I was going to say, take up a little bit of Nintendo just to ease it off. Fire up some Animal Crossing. No need to die there. But certainly there's a lot of experience points and nurturing that you need to do and rinse, repeat. And my kids getting right into it. But I think any game out there, whether from Zelda, if it's a role-playing game that takes you through from this journey or whatever, whatever it is, it could be the most simple kind of platform Mario game.
Yeah.
it's going to require a lot of patience, a lot of time, and a lot of farming. You know, you're farming a lot of your skills, right? Instead of just hunting, you know, it's
farming,
not
farming. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So in farming, you're nurturing, you're like kind of, you're growing that, your skill set. That's a bit of the mentality with a lot of gamers. They game it, they hack it so that how can I get more of that particular coin, whatever that value is, for my benefit, for me to kind of complete my goal, which is I always kind of remind students as well that it's not about you, and maybe that's the ultimate message as well for facilitators out there, that they need to remind themselves of the teachings of ikigai, you know, the meaning of life from the Japanese kind of culture. And I kind of stumbled across this while I was in Japan as well from my in-laws, and suddenly it makes you think, oh yeah, actually that's why maybe Japanese culture is quite humble. And they always think of others. You know, they've even got that phrase that's really hard to translate in English, which they use as a greeting almost.
Yeah, that's right. When I get to get gyozas,
gyozas. And what does that mean? It's like, oh, some people translate it as nice to meet you. And it's like, no, that's not it. And then when you really look the literal meaning, it says, please be good to me as I am to you. So it's like reciprocal. Ooh, kind
that's
of
beautiful.
Which kind of sounds scary at the same time. It's like, what do I owe you? But there's a community spirit in Japanese culture that you think, and that there is, that you're doing things for others and it's not about you. And I bring a lot of those teachings of empathy in my work in design, my work in teaching and learning, and just the way I engage with students. And me being as a darn good human being, I think, just think of others. You as a parent, you as a member of family, your community, do focus on the things that you can provide others rather than just for yourself. So yeah, bringing that mindset, I think that's a good one to bring that in. Wow, I just completely changed the trajectory of our gaming.
that's good. That's why we're here. But it's a great North Star to have, I think, that it goes through in terms of, yeah, as you said, through the whole process of design and then delivery of the workshop and what follows after is, if you have that sort of criteria of think about them, what's in service of them, that helps figure out, okay, how do I craft this message? How do I do the intro? How do I, like, what activities will best serve the need of all the purpose of this workshop? Yeah. So in terms of that development, just before we hit record, you said, oh, I've got a few workshops coming up. I'm in that design stage. Like, what does that look like for you? How do you, like, nut that out, what a workshop will look like?
It's quite heavily facilitated, some of these workshops, because it's teaching them the world of how they might facilitate the early stage of creating products. And that could be in the form of a design sprint, a UX bootcamp. So they're all quite early stage, which I love. I love that early stage. Not so much when they've actually fully formed that business and they're thinking of investment and everything. That's well and good as well. But I love the messy stage of early development, just discovering that problem that's worth solving. I love that part. Only because you see that light up in the student's brain, like, eyes, like, wow, okay.
Possibility.
You've exposed something. But am I teaching them anything new? Maybe. I think I'm consolidating a lot of their values already. They're getting a lot of these skill sets from all the other things. Again, they're part pedagogy, a bit of children's perspective in it as well, a massive part of the andragogy, because they do have life experiences that you need to be really mindful of, like adult audiences out there. So you're bringing those complexities. The preparation that I would do, because it is highly facilitated, that you're pretty much, you're planning out that crib sheet, right? That lesson plan. It's by the minute. You've got those activities lined up in a lesson plan. You've got your crib sheet. And I might have done this, you know, so many times, but I still need to write that out. It's a bit of a security blanket to know, yep, I'm on time. I'm super organized, because I'm actually, I tend to kind of just play jazz. I got to make sure I follow the script a little bit, not the script, but the crib sheet, the flow of it all, the director's notes. I need to make sure that I'm following that structure. So that requires a lot of preparation. Of course, all the tools and teaching aids that you're going to be using, whether that's, you know, online teaching aids, collaborative learning platforms, all these amazing tools. It's a great time to be facilitation right now.
Remember when I first started, like there was like one or two books with activities and it was like you just pour through these books. Now, that's probably the hardest thing is like then there's so many resources. So you could literally spend hours upon hour like searching through Google, Session Lab, all the places like looking for the perfect activity. So it can be a form of procrastination as well sometimes. I'm the same as you. Like, I love having being free also, but also just going, okay, I can trust my process and I'll go back to it. Go, all right, okay, cool. I'm ahead or behind and we'll see where we go. Do you have any sort of favorite activities you'd like to share with listeners?
You know, sometimes the in-person activities, I actually try to employ a lot of body movement in the cohort. So it could be a case of just playing a simple game of, it looks like musical chairs, but it's for university students. They just love it, right? It's a case of student comes up the front. I love shaping my workshops in a U-shaped format. You know, that I might not be allowed to do that these days because of COVID restrictions. The NCAFE style kind of format, where they're all kind of facing each other rather than just facing me. And in that format, I might get one participant or in their little tiny groups to share something really ridiculously unusual about them, but about themselves. And it could be a truth, it could be a complete lie. But it's a case of if there's an affinity with another member, it's like, oh yeah, that's me too. They swap. But usually if you game it, some of the students will go, oh, last night I had Uber Eats, and then suddenly, bang, there's like five students that get up and find a different seat. Yeah, a little bit of movement, but then they're kind of getting to know each other a little bit. So that's a really cool, fun little energizer.
I love that game. I've played it. It's super fun. I played it all around the world and every country, every culture, any level within an organization. Everyone just cracks up and it starts out pretty innocent. And then people like throw in like random, like crazy things. And it's the combined with the movement, as you said, it's super powerful.
And it kind of sticks and suddenly, oh, you're the guy who admitted you like smelling magazines or something.
you agreed to it.
Yeah. It's like, that's me too. Yeah. It kind of breaks the shackles of, you know, icebreaker, that's what it's meant to do. Like it's get that stiffness out of the room. In a virtual environment, it's a simple case of getting the smaller the environment is, a little the better. And I actually sometimes try to replicate a little bit of, your body might not be moving, but you're certainly providing some sort of interaction. That's why I love collaborative learning tools like Miro and Mural, because you can get students to kind of interact in a really visual way. One activity that I have in person, which is that, you know, where do you stand in this, on the spectrum? You know, kind of raise a particular debatable kind of question, maybe concerning their values or what they think leadership could be or what entrepreneurial mindset means to them. And one polar end of the spectrum is this way or that way. And there is no right or wrong. It's just about your personality type. And students will dot themselves in any part of that spectrum. And then you go around kind of just and just give us a little bit of a background why you chose to be in that spot. I think that's a really good one to get students to kind of speaking. Because sometimes students are the first one like, oh, great, not another stupid icebreaker.
Totally, yeah.
You know, how many times has a lecturer asked me to share something unique about themselves and they all roll their eyes? So you kind of, you need to be as creative as possible. Because sometimes you don't need to break the ice too much because a lot of them might actually know each other.
Having
a variety of activities within the sessions is very important, but at the same time, it's also key to keep it simple. Sometimes kind of, getting a little bit too busy on the kinesthetic things, like kinesthetic is great. You know, it's always good to get them, you know, moving and kind of using all forms of engagement in that learning style. But at the same time, you need to vary it up. If all you're doing is kinesthetic and they've been on their feet, you know, doing stuff,
moving around and
you know, putting marshmallows on spaghetti sticks, they eventually, I think it'll get really mundane and repetitive. So having a little bit of variety there is just as important. And so that goes back to, hey, let's keep it simple, let's make it so that you have control, but at the same time you're making it so that the students are just getting to work, that the cohort is getting a chance to use the scaffolding and it goes back to that teaching and learning cycles that we used before. You know, you build that feel, provide that scaffolding, there's that individual construction time for them to kind of own it, You know, yes. You've taught me something. I want to get my teeth into it. And that could be in a group environment in an individual sense, but you have that kind of framework or that structure, you have that in mind, and it could be in little tiny cycles throughout the entire engagement or throughout the entire program, right?
Mm.
It doesn't have to be in that one sitting. But if you're mindful of that teaching and learning kind of philosophy, I think you'll go a long way with achieving a lot of your learning outcomes for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I talk a lot about contrast as like a sort of driving factor, but you're right. There's got to be a balance in terms of how much contrast you bring in. Otherwise it can detract or diffuse from actually the purpose. If you're like, it's just like, okay, this is entertaining, but what is actually like, why are we here?
Yeah.
It can detract sometimes. And I know early days, I probably stacked too much fun and activity on top of that, and then diluted like the purpose of it. So we've all been there. Hey, Marvin, thank you. I mean, I've loved talking to you today. I could talk to you for hours. Just your story is remarkable, like your diverse backgrounds where you've worked and lived and everything else. And I love the metaphor of gaming. I'm really excited. What if I can get a Nintendo and pop it onto my tax, claim back yes, on tax as part of a research yes,
professional
activity.
Professional development, yeah.
That's it. If our listeners would love to reach out to you, where should we send them?
Well, I am, people can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm no stranger there. I'm no stranger anywhere, really. But yeah, that's my direct kind of easy kind of link to find me on. I do have a photography business as well. See, I wear many hats. So if you're looking to get your event covered, that's what I do, whether that's a wedding or obviously that's really my little business has been kind of punched in the guts recently.
Yeah.
Made my first financial loss there, but hey, that's just a little kind of it. That's what funds my coffee for sure. but yeah, look, I am in the university space. Lots of experience working in the universities in Sydney and here in Brisbane, QUT, and now University of Queensland. So it's you know, my audience there is slowly growing and developing. And you know, they're transient, they come and go, they graduate, but it fires me up to see those really rewarding outcomes that I see in students. And they might give you that shout out later on, but you know, I always had this thing on the top of my desk as remember me when, because seriously, I am dealing with the future leaders and change makers of our global society.
Absolutely. You
know, I love working with these emerging leaders, and it's humbling. I'm their coach. I'm their champion and in the corner. And it's not about me. It's about them. It's about their experience. It's about their needs and goals. And that's how I really apply that human-centered design philosophy in my programs.
Yeah,
having them at the center of everything I do.
So true. And UQ is my old stomping ground. Actually, I did a group project with a guy called Carl Hartman. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's just like, oh my gosh, I don't know what his valuation is. It's like in the multi-million. I'll have to send you his details after. Like, we just did this business group assignment together, and that's my claim to fame. Like, oh yeah, I was in the group assignment with Carl. It's exciting. There's a lot of very talented, amazing, hardworking people there.
Yeah.
Mom, it's been awesome chatting to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leanne.
Hey, thanks so much for sticking around. You've reached the end of another episode of the First Time Facilitator podcast. Connect with the show at firsttimefacilitator.com. or follow me on Instagram at Leanne Hughes to find out what I'm up to during the week. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share it with someone who will also appreciate the insight. And make it easier for yourself and subscribe to the show in your podcast player of choice. Thank you so much for listening, and chat to you next week.